Wandering Rhythms, Mondays from noon to two.
Join us in a weekly sample of music from planet Earth.
The strangest mixtape you will ever hear.
Desert blues.
Balkan punk.
Latin funk.
African psych.
Pigeon rap.
And anything and everything else you can imagine, equally represented by all continents.
Because good music is universal.
Wandering Rhythms.
Mondays at noon on CJSF 90.1 FM.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Hezbollah is taunting the Israelis and showing its capabilities and trying to keep everybody psychologically off balance in Israel, the citizenry, the government, the army. And this is going to go on for as long as the Israelis keep up their genocide in Gaza and the Americans keep supporting them and the world does nothing.
As Gaza ceasefire drags on, the talks around a Gaza ceasefire, Israel and Hezbollah engage in the heaviest cross-border attacks in months. The UN's calling for an immediate de-escalation. We'll get an update with Palestinian-American Rami Khoury. Then a federal judge has dealt a major blow to calls for justice in the police killing of Breonna Taylor, throwing out felony charges against two former Louisville police officers for their roles in Taylor's fatal shooting in her own home. We'll speak with family attorney Ben Crump. And we'll be joined by New York City Council Member Yusuf Salam, one of the exonerated Central Park Five, who just addressed the Democratic National Convention last week in Chicago.
When they see us, America will finally say goodbye to that hateful man. We will say what I have said after seven long years of wrongful incarceration. Free at last. Free at last. Free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last. God bless you, and God bless the United States of America.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres is calling for an immediate de-escalation after Israel and Hezbollah exchange heavy fire over the weekend. Early on Sunday morning, over 100 Israeli warplanes struck about 40 sites in Lebanon. Hezbollah responded by launching hundreds of drones and rockets at Israel. Three deaths were reported in Lebanon, one in Israel. Israel described its attacks as preemptive, saying the raid was conducted to blunt an imminent attack by Hezbollah. But Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah rejected that claim.
What happened was an aggression, not a preemptive action. And if we were to assume this was a preemptive action, it left no impact whatsoever on our military operations today, neither on its missiles, nor on its drones, nor on its fighters.
We'll have more on this story after headlines. Human Rights Watch has accused Israel of arbitrarily detaining and torturing Palestinian healthcare workers. Eight doctors, nurses, and paramedics recently held in Israeli prisons have described being blindfolded, beaten, held in forced stress positions, and handcuffed for extended periods of time. They also reported torture, including rape and sexual abuse by Israeli forces. Over the weekend, Israel bombed another school in Gaza, sheltering displaced Palestinians. Meanwhile, on Saturday, an Israeli strike on a home in Khan Yunis killed 11 members of the same family, including two children. This comes as Israeli forces have withdrawn from the Hamad city portion of Khan Yunis, leaving the neighborhood largely destroyed. Rescue workers recovered 16 bodies from the rubble. Residents say they have no safe place to go.
We're a safe area. There is no safety. Where is safety? We flee every day. We get displaced every day under the rockets, under the bombing. I am alone with my little children. I flee with them every day from a place to another. I don't know where to go. They tell you about safe areas. Where is safety? Make me feel safe. Make the little child feel safe. We are tired people. It's enough. Have mercy.
Hostage talks were held in Cairo, Egypt, over the weekend, but a deal has not been reached. Egyptian officials said neither Hamas nor Israel agreed to a number of compromises put forward by a mediator. Hamas has said any deal must include a permanent ceasefire and a full Israeli withdrawal from Gaza. At least three people died overnight in Ukraine as Russia launched a barrage of drone and missile strikes targeting critical infrastructure, including power and water supplies across Ukraine. The attacks come a day after five Russian civilians were killed in a Ukrainian strike on the Russian city of Belgorod. Meanwhile, in the Ukrainian city of Kramatorsk, a safety advisor working for the Reuters news agency was killed, and four Reuters journalists were injured in a Russian strike on their hotel on Saturday. Ryan Evans was a 38-year-old British citizen. In a statement, Reuters said, quote, "Ryan has helped so many of our journalists cover events around the world. We will miss him terribly," unquote. The injured journalists are reportedly from Ukraine, the United States, Latvia, and Germany. Two of them were hospitalized. Meanwhile, Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi met with President Volodymyr Zelensky in Kyiv on Friday. Modi called for peace talks to end the war.
No conflict can be resolved on the battlefield. The road to resolution can only be found through dialogue and diplomacy, and we should move in that direction without wasting any time. Both sides should sit together to find ways to end this crisis.
In news from Iraq, two journalists were killed on Friday in a Turkish drone strike. The journalists, Gulistan Tara of Turkey and Hira Bahadin of Iraq, worked for the Kurdish outlet Shtark TV. A third journalist was seriously wounded. Another journalist working for a Kurdish outlet was killed last month. Reporters Without Borders says Iraqi Kurdistan is becoming one of the most dangerous areas in the world for reporters. In U.S. election news, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has suspended, though not ended, his independent presidential campaign and endorsed Donald Trump. The two campaigned together on Friday in Arizona. Kennedy's brothers and sisters have publicly criticized his decision. In a statement, they said, quote, "Our brother Bobby's decision to endorse Trump today is a betrayal of the values that our father and our family hold most dear. It is a sad ending to a sad story," they said. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is the son of Robert F. Kennedy, a nephew of President John F. Kennedy, both of whom were assassinated in the 1960s. On Friday, Donald Trump vowed, if elected, to launch a commission on presidential assassinations and attempts.
And they will also conduct a rigorous review of the attack last month. But I tell you, I have never had more people ask me, "Please, sir, release the documents on the Kennedy assassination." And we're going to do that.
In other election news, Kamala Harris's campaign has reported she set a new record by raising $540 million over the past month since President Biden suspended his reelection bid. Harris and her running mate Tim Walz will launch a Georgia bus tour on Wednesday. Donald Trump's golf resort in Bedminster, New Jersey, is hosting a January 6 awards gala next week when organizers plan to honor 20 defendants arrested for taking part in the deadly January 6 insurrection. Donald Trump is listed as an invited speaker to the gala. Meanwhile, a Maryland man who threw a smoke bomb at police on January 6 has been convicted on a number of charges, including civil disorder and assaulting police. Justin Lee, who became a police officer after the insurrection, will be sentenced on November 6. The U.S. Department of Justice and 8 states have sued the property management software company RealPage, accusing the firm of helping landlords collude to drive up the cost of rent. The firm collects rental information from competing corporate landlords and then uses algorithms to set rents. Attorney General Merrick Garland accused the firm of violating the Sherman Antitrust Act.
When the Sherman Act was passed, an anti-competitive scheme might have looked like robber barons shaking hands at a secret meeting. Today, it looks like landlords using mathematical algorithms to align their rents.
In Kentucky, a federal judge has thrown out felony charges against 2 former Louisville police officers connected with the fatal police shooting of Breonna Taylor in her own home over 4 years ago. The 2 officers had been accused of falsifying a warrant that led to the fatal police raid on Taylor's apartment. The officers, Joshua Janes and Kyle Meany, were not at the scene of the shooting in March 2020. We'll have more on this later in the broadcast. We'll be speaking with Taylor family attorney Ben Crump. In Tennessee, a 2nd former Memphis police officer has pleaded guilty in the police killing of Tyree Nichols, a 29-year-old black father who died after a brutal police beating. The former officer, Emmett Martin, pleaded guilty to federal civil rights violations and could face up to 40 years in prison. In Florida, a sheriff's deputy has been charged with manslaughter in connection with the killing of Roger Fortson, a 23-year-old black Air Force member who was shot to death in his own home. According to the Associated Press, former Okaloosa County Deputy Eddie Duran is just the 4th Florida police officer in the past 35 years to be charged for an on-duty killing. French authorities have detained the founder and CEO of the popular news and messaging service Telegram. Pavel Durov was detained at a Paris airport on an arrest warrant related to allegations that Telegram has been used for illegal activity. Durov is a dual French-Russian citizen. Telegram posted a message online saying, quote, "It's absurd to claim that a platform or its owner are responsible for abuse of that platform. Almost 1 billion users globally use Telegram as means of communication and as a source of vital information," unquote. The app has a history of refusing to cooperate with law enforcement. In Burkina Faso, a militant group with links to al-Qaeda has claimed responsibility for an attack that killed up to 200 people and injured 140. According to the Norwegian Refugee Council, attacks in Burkina Faso this year have killed more than 8,400 people. At least 13 migrants are dead after their boat sank off the coast of Yemen. Authorities are searching for over 12 others who've been missing since last week, according to the International Organization for Migration, the IOM. The boat had departed from Djibouti in East Africa, carrying 25 Ethiopian and 2 Yemeni migrants. Annually, tens of thousands of migrants depart from the Horn of Africa, fleeing conflict, extreme poverty, and the impacts of the climate crisis, setting off on a dangerous journey across the Red Sea, many with the hope of reaching wealthier nations and the Gulf. In Norway, climate activists with the group Extinction Rebellion blocked an oil terminal at a major gas processing plant Saturday.
Now we are outside the Karstø oil terminal. We have just begun a blockade of one of Norway's largest processing plants for gas in the North Sea. So we demand a plan for a phasing out of oil and gas production in Norway, because oil and gas are killing the planet and several billion people are in danger of losing their lives if we cannot manage to remain under the 1.5 degrees Celsius warming.
Here in New York, dozens of feminist climate activists were arrested outside the Manhattan home of city CEO Jane Fraser. The action was part of Summer of Heat, a season-long series of civil disobedience targeting the funders of the climate crisis. And the Biden administration has been dealt a setback in its efforts to use the Civil Rights Act of 1964 to fight environmental injustice in Louisiana. On Friday, a federal court ruled the Environmental Protection Agency is barred from using the federal civil rights law to prevent Louisiana from issuing permits to new fossil fuel facilities in an area known as Cancer Alley, a predominantly black community. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres is calling for an immediate de-escalation after Israel and Hezbollah exchanged heavy fire over the weekend. Early Sunday morning, over 100 Israeli warplanes struck about 40 sites in Lebanon. Hezbollah responded by launching hundreds of drones and rockets at Israel. Three deaths were reported in Lebanon, one in Israel. Israel described its attacks as preemptive, saying the raid was conducted to blunt an imminent attack by Hezbollah. But Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah rejected the claim.
What happened was an aggression, not a preemptive action. And if we were to assume this was a preemptive action, it left no impact whatsoever on our military operations today, neither on its missiles, nor on its drones, nor on its fighters.
Hezbollah's leader Hassan Nasrallah also spoke about the Gaza ceasefire negotiations in Cairo, Egypt.
Our operation today, in any case, may be very useful for the negotiations, for the Palestinian side or the Arab side that is negotiating alongside the Palestinian team. And its message is clear to the enemy and to those behind the enemy, to the Americans that any hopes of shutting down the supporting fronts, whether in Lebanon, in Yemen, or in Iraq, these fronts are actually open. These hopes are dashed.
Meanwhile, the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, said Israel's military campaign against Hezbollah will continue.
What happened today is not the end of the story. Hezbollah tried to attack the state of Israel with rockets and drones early in the morning. We instructed the Israeli army to carry out a powerful preemptive strike to remove the threat. The Israeli army destroyed thousands of short-range rockets. All of them were intended to harm our citizens and our forces in the Galilee. In addition, the Israeli army intercepted all the UAVs that Hezbollah launched at a strategic target in the center of the country.
An American journalist, senior public policy fellow at the American University of Beirut, also a non-resident senior fellow at the Arab Center, Washington, D.C. Rami, welcome back to Democracy Now! Talk about this escalation of violence. I mean, we haven't seen anything like this on the northern border between Israel and Lebanon in many months.
It's an escalation of aggression by Israel and resistance by Hezbollah. And the mutual attacks back and forth have been going on for probably the last 16, 18 years since the 2006 war between them. But this is significant for several reasons. First, it's a much higher level of attack in the number of fighter jets from the Israeli sides and sites attacked, and the number of rockets and drones sent by Hezbollah. Both sides are claiming things that we can't verify, so we just have to wait a little bit, a couple of days more, for the actual factual evidence to come out. But what's significant from the Hezbollah side is that they used Katyusha rockets mostly, which are kind of old-fashioned, limited capability rockets, not very good in terms of hitting, being aimed, etc. Then they used some drones, and their focus was to detract the defense system in Israel, the air defense system, with the rockets, and then get the drones in to attack some military sites. They're clearly targeting military sites, and the Israelis say everything is fine. The Hezbollah says they hit some of their targets, but they're assessing the situation now. But the more sophisticated weapons that Hezbollah has, with much better guidance systems, much more accurate, and can evade the Israeli defense systems, haven't been used yet. So this is a sign from Hezbollah that they're going to attack to avenge the killing of their commander in Beirut about a month ago. And they are going to do it with increasingly sophisticated weapon system down the road. Their aim is to do psychological warfare as well as actual damage. They want the whole country to remain on edge. They want the army to be preoccupied in the north. They want the 70, 80,000 civilians who are evacuated from North Israel to remain evacuated and annoyed and angry. Disruption to businesses, to tourism, to all kinds of investments, and to keep the military guessing what's going to what's going to come next. So this is an escalation of a pattern that's been really the norm for many, many years. And both sides, remarkably, but expectedly, said earlier today that they have finished this phase, and therefore they're not going to continue large-scale attacks today or tomorrow. It seems that they've done what they did. And this is the pattern, that one side does something, the other side does something of equal magnitude. And it's going to go on until two things happen. The Israelis get out of Gaza, and the Palestinians can rebuild their lives there. And second of all, some signs of action or movement towards resolving the overall Palestinian-Israeli and Arab-Israeli conflict, some signs of that materialize. Because until then, this is going to continue. There will continue to be this antagonism by the Hezbollah and Lebanese and Syrians and Palestinians and others and Yemenis towards Israel for what it's done in Palestine. And this has to be resolved politically. It can't be resolved militarily.
This is Israeli Army spokesperson Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari speaking Sunday.
We look around the state of Israel all the time, also at Yemen, also at Iran. I remind you that Hezbollah is an extension of the Iranians. They are financed, armed, targeted by the Iranians, and I am convinced that this widespread shooting is also directed by Iran, also under Iranian responsibility, and we will attack and remove threats wherever necessary.
If you can respond, Rami Khoury.
This is a typical Israeli Zionist propaganda message that has been going on for years and years. They will always, and with the U.S. close behind them, following their lead, they'll always find some threat in the Middle East. Before it used to be Saddam Hussein, it was Qaeda, it was the Russians, it was the PLO. Now it's Iran is behind everything bad. And they will focus a lot of attention on addressing that issue, trying to evade the central reality that the Palestine-Israel conflict, the conflict between Zionism and Arabism in Palestine, which has been going on for 100 years, that's the real core of the problem. And so these are evasive tactics, diversionary tactics. Iran is a very close ally of Hezbollah. They're deeply involved in increasing its technical and military capabilities, as they are with Hamas and the Ansarullah in Yemen, the Houthis. But to say that Iran directs them and tells them what to do, I believe is a bit of a stretch. And so it's like the relationship between Israel and the United States. They're very close in armaments and strategy, and the U.S. now is actively, almost enthusiastically supporting the Israeli genocide in Gaza. But the Israel does what it feels it needs to do, and the U.S. doesn't seem to be able or willing to stop it. And I think we have a similar relationship between Hezbollah and Iran. They're very close, but Iran doesn't command direct Hezbollah and telling it what to do.
If you can talk about what's happening right now, this whole the Gaza ceasefire negotiations, Hamas sent representatives to Cairo, Israel had their delegation, Egypt and Qatar are involved, but it looks like they broke down once again, though they say they're continuing.
Well, they'd reached an agreement in early July when Biden announced his so-called, plan for a ceasefire, and Hamas accepted it. Biden said this came from the Israelis. And then when Hamas accepted it, the Israelis, Netanyahu, came back and added more conditions. And this has been the pattern ever since. And whenever Hamas accepts it, they add more conditions, suggesting that Netanyahu doesn't really want a ceasefire. He wants to just keep negotiating. And I think it's pretty clear now that the ceasefire negotiations today are the equivalent of the so-called peace process in the bigger Arab-Israeli conflict over the last 40 years, which also was under U.S. Management or direction. And the ceasefire talks seem to be, in the eyes of most analysts and observers in the Middle East, there seemed to be a mechanism just to delay anything serious from happening, to allow Israel to continue with its genocidal killing of, the figures, the official figures are over 40,000. Most people say it's closer to 150,000 dead, but we'll find that out in the future. So the ceasefire talks are a fictitious political dynamic, and the reason they're fictitious is because the United States is trying to be the main driver of the peace process, to the point where Biden announced an agreement back in early July. But the U.S. is also the main funder, arms supplier, and political cover provider, diplomatic protector of Israel in the U.N. and other places. You can't have the one party that is the major force for letting the genocide happen, technically and politically, and at the same time claim to be a mediator that's trying to mediate between Israel and Hamas. This is the kind of fiction and the fantasy that comes out of the State Department and the White House, and most of the world just watches this on TV thinking, oh, something might happen. The important point is the Hamas, and you see it in Hezbollah, is that they have taken a much harder position. They say, we accepted the ceasefire that Biden provided that came from Israel. What more do you want from us? We are ready to stop the fighting, exchange prisoners and hostages, et cetera, et cetera. But they have certain hardcore demands. And what's obvious now is that both Hezbollah and Hamas refuse to play the game that all the Arab governments and Fatah under Arafat and now under Abu Mazen, the Palestinian leadership, played for so many years, which is to make concession after concession after concession, rely on Western or other international intervention, and then expect something to happen. We've realized, everybody in the Arab region has realized, that this is not a serious process. This is the latest manifestation of a colonial process managed by white, northern, racist, militant groups, countries. It used to be England, now it's the United States, that keeps playing games with the people of the region for the benefits of either the Western powers or today for Israel. So the ceasefire talks should not be taken very seriously as an effort to actually bring about a ceasefire. They are better seen as an indication of the skewed relationship between Western imperial powers and Israel, which is their closest manifestation in the region, settler colonial power. Relations between them and between the Palestinians, who are standing steady. Hamas is holding its ground and saying, look, we're prepared to make peace. We're prepared to coexist with the current Israeli state, as a Jewish majority state. They've made these offers many times. But they're refusing to make more concessions is an important indicator of where they are. And this is something that the Western Israeli and Western imperial powers don't know how to handle. They're not used to steadfast Arab parties. They're used to compliant Arabs who, you know, roll over and say, yes, sir, yes, sir. And this isn't happening anymore. So this is an important moment. It's the generational change in leaderships in the Arab country. And this is why the majority of ordinary people in the Arab world stand by Hamas and the Palestinians. They might not support the actual actions that it had used, whether either on October 7 or previously in terms of terror attacks inside Israel, attacking buses and pizza parlors and stuff, but they support its basic political stand that we have rights, we are prepared to achieve those rights through a peaceful negotiation. We are not prepared to play cartoon games with people like Anthony Blinken and Dennis Ross before him and people who are not serious about the real resolution that is required to address the real core of the problem, which is the conflict between Zionist Israel and Zionism on the one hand and Palestinian-Arabism on the other. There is a resolution to that conflict, a peaceful resolution that can be done, just like there is a resolution in Gaza, but the Israelis don't want to do it.
Rami Khoury, I want to thank you for being with us. Palestinian-American journalist, senior public policy fellow at the American University of Beirut, also a non-resident senior fellow at the Arab Center, Washington, D.C.